Conspiracies, endless wars, hidden forbidden history, the depopulation agenda, cryptozoology, mystical visions, hidden mysteries, advanced subterranean civilizations, flying saucers, alien abductions, and secret space programs, time travel, wellness, and healthy living. Where do you go to find out about these subjects and more? To James Bartley's Cosmic Switchboard Show. That's where. James Bartley will provide cutting-edge information and will interview the top investigators and researchers in a variety of fields. Listen in every week to the Cosmic Switchboard Show, hosted by James Bartley.
Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you are listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, our very special guest is Lotta Ray. Lotta Ray is a future trends forecaster, a geopolitical analyst, and a prolific author who has written a number of books, including Catharsis, The Legend of the Lemurians, The Earthshifter, Stepford USA, Gold Train, and Green Desert. Lotta Ray, an internationally certified feng shui master, world traveler, linguist, financial consultant, and a metaphysics researcher. Lotta was born in Russia and holds a master's degree in comparative linguistics, and she actually spent a lot of time and worked in Havana, Cuba, part of an educational exchange delegation, and she had the opportunity at one time to interview Fidel Castro. So this is a really important show, and I'm very excited about it, because Lotta is a woman after my own heart. She blends the expertise in geopolitical analysis, understanding of true history, and she melds it with an understanding of quantum consciousness, metaphysics, feng shui, and the way energy works, and the true history of this entire planet. Before we delve into the interview, I'd like to say why it's important for us to have this perspective of Russia, of geopolitics from the Russian perspective. There's a lot of misunderstanding and deliberate disinformation here in the West about Russia and about Vladimir Putin in particular. The problem, as I see it, is the never-ending brainwashing and propaganda meted out to people at all ages going back decades now. When most people think of Russia, they think of the Bolshevik regime. They think of the USSR, of Stalinism, which is an indication of the obliviousness that people in the West have about the true history of Russia. If anyone dislikes or detests the Bolsheviks and the Soviet regime, it is the present-day Russians. So nobody knows the true history of Russia better than the Russians. And so what the corporate media today is doing is they are playing on this generations-old bias towards all things Russia, and they are using that ignorance to foment hatred and fear vis-a-vis Russia. We see this played out in Hollywood the last several years. We see a never-ending string of movies in which it is always the Russians that are the bad guys. It's the Russian mafia that's the bad guys. It's Russian military. It's Russian intelligence, so on and so forth. And that is once again meant to further brainwash and propagandize the people. So that is why we're bringing Lotta Ray onto our show, and we hope it's the start of a long, fruitful association with her. So without any further ado, Lotta, how are you?
Pretty good. Thank you for having me.
The pleasure is all ours, Lotta. For the benefit of our listeners who may not be familiar with you or your work, can you tell us a bit about yourself and how you came to be a leading geopolitical analyst and how you came to do the important work you're doing today?
I did a lot of things in my life, and one of them was working for Smith Barney, which is a part of Citigroup, as financial consultant. I did that for many years, and I lived in New York for many years, and I had a very good inside look at what went on in the finance industry as well as in the political scene of the U.S. I did a lot of investments for my clients, both in the U.S. and internationally. And my clients were international. A lot of them were actually Russian. And so throughout the late 90s and into the 2000s, I gleaned a lot of things that went on, not to mention that I was always interested in geopolitics as part of my education as a linguist and international relations consultant. I traveled a lot. I lived in about 30 countries or traveled to that many countries in between. And I always had that interest, but I was always also interested in things like beauty, harmony, at the very same time, spirituality. So at one point, I was more going towards spiritual side of things. Then when I realized what was really happening, and my awakening basically started when the bombings of Yugoslavia occurred. That was, I worked at Smith Barney at the time, and when I saw what was happening, I knew the true history of Yugoslavia. I knew all about that civil war. It is very easy to know when you're Russian what's happening in Yugoslavia. These are basically brotherly people. We all know each other. We know the truth of what goes on there. And I remember arguing and trying to somehow instill some truth, the true knowledge, into my co-workers at work, at Smith Barney, at Citigroup. They were looking at me very incredulously when I was telling them that, no, Serbs were not all those evil beings as they're being portrayed in the Western press. They are just as much victims as the other side, as Croats or Bosnians, and blaming Serbs for everything, while exonerating or closing your eyes to the crimes that the other side commits. That's just wrong. That was the part of the awakening. And then, of course, 9/11 happened, which opened my eyes further. And soon thereafter, I left Smith Barney because I could not stand it anymore. So I went to the East. I studied feng shui. I began studying it much earlier, but I completed my education around that time, and I started my own practice, which was very successful, became international, and I thought that I would do feng shui and write books, write novels for the rest of my life. And then Ukraine happened, and that was the end of 2013. At the same time, we were going into the period of the final preparation, just final stretch towards Sochi Olympics. And I saw what kind of crazy witch hunt there was in the West against the Sochi Olympics, calls to boycott it. You probably remember more or less what went on. And at the very same time, the Maidan in Ukraine was developing. And that's where I drew the line. And I started my blog, Futurist Trendcast, and I began writing about the truth about Ukraine, about the connection, how Beijing Olympics were used in 2008, at that very time, Saakashvili of Georgia attacked South Ossetia to blame on Russia the supposed attack on Georgia. And how Sochi Olympics and Ukrainian Maidan were related. Then a lot of people started asking me for predictions whether Putin will send troops to Ukraine. And I said, absolutely not. My prediction from the get-go was he will never send troops to Ukraine. Russia will not go militarily into Ukraine because Russia will do the opposite. I also predicted right away that Crimea will secede and go to Russia. And sure enough, 2-3 months later, it became clear that Crimea seceded. I also predicted that Russia will not be able to accept Donbass the same way it accepted Crimea, and on and on and on. There were a lot of other predictions that I made, and many of them have already come true, or they are starting to materialize. And that was the beginning. People started asking me for interviews, and more and more subscribers came in, and before I knew it, I had a ton of subscribers, a ton of people asking me questions on my blog, and Futurist Trendcast became the toast of the town at the time. And so I continued that, and I went on to write Earthshift Report, and I plan nonfiction books. Previously, as you cited before, I wrote three novels and two novelettes, which were fiction, of course. And there is an element in each book that is geopolitical, and the element of truth. Each book has that element. But now I intend to concentrate on nonfiction books in which I will go a lot further than that and reveal a lot of hidden elements, including hidden history, including my futuristic predictions, etc., etc.
All of that information, including your YouTube channel, will be on the Cosmic Switchboard website. I'm glad you mentioned Yugoslavia, because what I saw developing vis-a-vis Russia was something similar to what happened to Germany prior to World War I. After the Boer Wars, Britain reorganized at the behest of the secret elite. A number of things were done to isolate Germany diplomatically. Eventually, the media began painting this fear-mongering amongst the people in the West about German spies, German fifth columnists everywhere. And there was this drumbeat for war for Germany long before what happened in Sarajevo, the assassination of Franz Ferdinand, mm-hmm. which supposedly sparked all this, but that was just the tip of the iceberg. The agenda all along was to isolate Germany and destroy them because they were such a problem in the overall globalist scheme of things. And that was done after two world wars. And then what I saw afterwards was that the Soviet Red Army was deliberately allowed to storm through Eastern and Central Europe, thus setting the stage for the so-called Cold War, collapse of the Soviet Union. What happened was NATO went ahead and seemed to absorb all these formerly Eastern Bloc Warsaw Pact countries, basically moving the NATO border all the way to the east and threatening Russia. And so when Yugoslavia started to get fragmented and destroyed, I immediately saw this is an attempt to cause further problems with Russia. Then we saw that the demonizing of Milosevic, the demonizing of the Serbs. The Serbs were the best allies of the Americans and the British in Yugoslavia in World War II. You were talking about Ukraine. Could you tell our listeners some of the details of how the crisis in Ukraine came to be and how a lot of it, once again, had to do with foreign financiers and Western black ops?
You know, James, you bring so many good points up. It's just enough for another show. But let me just... I will talk about Ukraine just in a moment. Let me just tell you, you just went through the 20th century very briefly. I will do it just as briefly. I'll try to. But I have a few corrections to what you said. Since I have been in this, have been brewing in the juices, not only I grew up in Russia and partially went to school in Russia, then after that I moved to the West, as well as I lived in the East, and I lived in Cuba, and I lived all over. So I can see various perspectives. And after a long time of education, probing, looking very deeply into issues, and also going not only deeper into the historic and geopolitical and political and various psychological elements that pertain to Earth, I also went, so to speak, cosmic, looked from above, from the esoteric and kind of a galactic perspective into all this, from multidimensional perspective. I call it multidimensional. That's my definition, because I feel that if we're all one, but we are, in fact, there are layers, like, you know, layers in a cake, so to speak, which are dimensions, or you could call them various spheres, like one sphere wraps around in another and then another bigger sphere. So the bigger your sphere of your dimensional sphere, if you're looking into deeper, into things from higher dimensions, the higher your dimensional look, the more you will see, the more intricacies and the more variations and the more balanced your outlook is, so to speak. I hope I'm explaining it well enough.
Yes, you are, and I want to hear about all this stuff.
So back to Russia and the Soviet Union and what happened during 20th century, World War One and World War Two. Of course, different people will tell you different perspectives, but I'm going to try to keep it as balanced as possible. So first of all, let's begin with England versus Germany versus Russia. This is a very important point, and I'm glad that you brought it up, because that is something everybody has to understand. The thing is that there were three, turn of the 20th century, there were three powers at the time, three great powers, and they were at different stages of development and different capabilities. One was the Great Britain. Another was Russia. And the third upcoming power, up and coming, okay, it was trying to break into that exclusive club, was Germany. There were several other powers, but Germany, in fact, was very ambitious, and let's just face it, Germany was always pretty aggressive. So we should not discount that. That said, I actually love Germany, love German people. I had really nice German friends, love German culture. This is not to blame Germany. I actually have been to Germany several times, enjoyed it thoroughly, and actually love it. So what was happening at that time was what Britain was trying to do. It was trying to, let's use a word such as do in, kill off, you know, finish off the two competitors. Actually, if they could, they wanted to finish off more competitors. The Brits, as well as Americans right now, they assumed the British way of doing things when the global headquarters, the NWO headquarters, transferred from Great Britain to the U.S. after World War II, U.S. assumed the same way of doing things. They inherited everything. So the way U.K. was operating, they preferred not to fight themselves. They always preferred to butt the heads of their competitors so they would weaken each other and, if possible, destroy each other. Therefore, their prerogative was to do whatever they could to butt Russia with whoever else they, in order to weaken Russia, to kind of destabilize Russia. There was previously, before 2014 and the beginning of World War One, there was a war that nobody likes to talk about. In 1904, there was a very disastrous Russo-Japanese war.
Japanese war, yes.
And that war was pretty disastrous for Russia. And in part, not only because Russia was not prepared for war and it came as a surprise, but also because there was a betrayal by Brits and French who betrayed Russia and made them exposed. It's a very long story. There was a Port Arthur story when they made Russian ships to go out of the harbor because Japanese threatened to bomb the harbor, and Brits and French, who were also stationed in, and they were supposed to be allies, incidentally, who were stationed in the same harbor, said that Russian ships, you have to leave because we don't want to be bombed because of you. Okay, they were supposed to be allies. Okay, nice allies. So the precursor for that, which was completely missed by the Russian Empire, and this is where the problem begins and the tragedy begins, it was missed. From the geopolitical perspective, there were bloopers made in the beginning of the 20th century, and then allowing themselves to be dragged into World War One, Nicholas II, the Emperor of Russia, tried to make to help make peace between all those warring countries. He didn't want to enter the war, and the reason he, from the human perspective and psychological perspective, the reason he actually entered the war was the promise by French and Brits to give Russia the Black Sea Strait. Those who follow me and who read my Earthshift reports know that I wrote about this issue, that Istanbul, which was called Constantinople previously, and the Black Sea Strait, which are vitally important for Russia, were promised to Russia as a result of World War One. And psychologically, Nicholas entered the war because of that. However, I don't want to spend too much time on this. However, they missed the fact that Germany and Russia had to be butted, heads their butted, so that they could
yes.
actually destroy each other, which is what happened in the end. Of course, we can also bring in that Rasputin was killed because he was the powerful voice for peace at the time, so that he could not talk Nicholas and his wife into quitting war, into exiting war. And once he was killed, there was nobody else. And the rest is history. Then we have 1917. Then we have the Bolshevik Revolution. Incidentally, I view at the time of the Bolsheviks and what happened during Soviet Union, where I was actually born and grew up when I was little, I view it, it's a more complicated story, let's put it this way. Maybe one day we'll discuss it, or I'll write about it and people can read on my blog all about, or in an upcoming book, what really went on. I think that, however hard and unpleasant perhaps at times, Soviet period was necessary to preserve what I called the great balancer. And this is Russia. This is Russia's ultimate historic and karmic role to be the great balancer of the planet Earth. And I'm sure we'll talk about that as well. But so we are coming into World War II. And here, again, I would disagree with you that Russian troops were allowed to take Berlin and roll through Europe. I think it was actually not anticipated to happen this way. And just knowing from not personal experience, but from the experience of my own family and my own people, how it all went on, it went a little bit differently than that. And then, of course, we have Cold War. We'll skip over that. And then we're coming into the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991. And again, this is a long story. I can only confirm to you really quickly that the collapse of the Soviet Union, of course, had internal reasons that were very, very strong. However, it was engineered, orchestrated, pre-planned, and pushed in that direction very strongly by the West. That is an absolute, I can absolutely strongly tell you this. There's no doubt about it. I studied it at length, and when I discovered everything that I discovered, that was difficult. Although, of course, there were internal reasons which were manipulated in a specific way. And now we come to the color revolution situation and everything that went on in 1991 through 2000 or 1999 maybe. And that period, which is called the terrible period of trials in Russia, it was very difficult. But again, it was, if you look at it from the higher perspective, from the higher dimension, it was necessary. People had to learn their karmic lesson. They became too complacent during later Soviet times. They stopped being what they should be. And Russia was almost lost. Russia almost disappeared. How the awakening started, in my opinion, what happened in Yugoslavia, especially the bombings of Yugoslavia, were that awakening point that very few in the West know. It's never publicized in the West. But this is when the relations between Russia and the West actually were turned around 180 degrees. Yeltsin, before that, actually believed everything the West said and did everything the West suggested or recommended. There were Russia was swarming with American advisors throughout the 90s. Swarming. That's what Russian politicians, high-level politicians, Duma deputies are confirming now, that they were everywhere. They were telling everybody what to do. And suddenly, as the bombings of Yugoslavia started, Prime Minister, a very interesting figure in itself, Primakov, was flying. He was in a plane flying to the U.S. He was approaching. He later recounted that he saw the shore of the U.S. in the window of his plane. And suddenly he gets a call that U.S. started bombing Yugoslavia. I think it was planned like that on purpose because they wanted to humiliate Russia additionally. I'll tell you in a second why this would be humiliation, why it was that important. But back to the story. So they were flying, in fact. Primakov was told by the U.S., it's like a carrot and a stick kind of thing. He was promised that the Jackson-Vinick Act would be repelled if he signed certain agreements, and that Russia would receive huge loans and guarantees of investment into Russia. And Russia needed that desperately because the economy was nearly destroyed in the 90s after that brutal privatization and oligarchs coming to power and who like tore the country apart. And economically, it was really experiencing very bad times. So it was in desperate need of investments, desperate need of additional trade with the U.S., which was promised to Russia. All that was promised while they started bombing Yugoslavia. In other words, carrot and stick. At the same time, we humiliate you. At the same time, we show you that we can do whatever we want with your very close potential ally, Yugoslavia, which is considered a brotherly nation, very close brotherly nation. But we have a carrot for you. All these things that we will give you instead, if you submit to our will, shut up and do what we say that you do. If you don't notice we're bombing Belgrade, we will give you all this. So what do you think Primakov does? He says, turn right around. And he was already about to land. He already could see Washington, D.C. out of his plane. As the plane turned around, made a 180-degree turnaround, literally, and flew back to Russia without further ado. The Americans were speechless, absolutely speechless. They did not expect that at all. So that was the turnaround. Do you know what happened after that? After that, Primakov advised, and Primakov is a very, very important figure in Russian history and Soviet history. He recently passed on, and there was like a big, big deal in Russia, big funeral, a lot of people singing like praise and eulogies to him. He was a very, very important figure. I will talk about it some other time in my future book, which will be called The Putin Enigma. So those who are interested, because he's closely connected to that. But I will give you a sneak peek. And here it is. So Primakov comes back, literally shakes up drunken Yeltsin out of his stupor and says, look, we've got to change everything. And then they call in Putin from St. Petersburg. And they make him prime minister. And shortly thereafter, well, Putin, within several months, actually managed to turn around quite a bit. And he was an absolute unknown. And he was met with by oligarchs in Russia at the time, who ruled everything, who had a sway over Yeltsin, over everything, politics, economics. They bought up most of the Duma deputies and most of the governors and mayors in different cities and regions of Russia. It was crazy. And he started turning things around, but very quietly. Oligarchs were coming into Putin's office and were threatening him point blank. They would put literally, like they do in the U.S., their feet on his desk. And in a very relaxed manner, would threaten him, would say, you know what, if you don't do what we say, you are done for. You are not going to last another day in this office. Well, Putin listened, was politely nodded, and quietly did his thing where he could do it. And then suddenly, very suddenly, Yeltsin steps down, and that is a story in itself, how all that happened. And then Putin gets elected just several months later, on his own merit, on the basis of how he made peace with Chechnya, how he managed to turn around the Chechen situation, which the majority of Russians had thought he would never turn around, or now nobody could turn around. That's what Russians thought. He turned it around within 1 year, and Russians voted him as a president just by March of 2000, just based on that and whatever little that they knew of him at the time. And the rest is history. Now we have what we have. We have day and night what Russia was in 1999 or 2000 and what it is now. It all starts again in 1991. It actually starts before that. And I wrote very extensively, I'm inviting people to visit my blog, which is Futurist Trendcast. On the right side, you will see advertisement for my Earthshift reports. There are several Earthshift reports about Ukraine, which you can donate a nominal amount and read any of those reports. And I will just tell you that it's going to be Earthshift Report number 2 and number 3 and then also number 6. These are all about Ukraine. I'm not going to go into that. Just please visit futuristtrendcast.wordpress.com or just type in my name in Google, Lada Ray, and a Futurist Trendcast will come up, and my website will come up as well. So what happened was that there really was no country called Ukraine, and a lot of my readers, and maybe, James, you probably know that I am what is considered half Ukrainian. My mother was Ukrainian and half Russian, so I know what I'm talking about. My mother was from the Dnipropetrovsk Oblast, grew up in a village. Well, their family was actually wealthy as far as village families go before the Bolshevik Revolution, and they suffered their own problems, and there was repression stuff, and some of their members of their family were in the White Army fighting against the Reds. My father's family was a very well known and wealthy noble family from Russia, from central Russia, from the heartland, from Voronezh, which is considered now southern Russia, now that Ukraine is separate. And they also had their share of turmoils and problems. And again, I'm not going to go into that, but I know what I'm talking about when I talk about these things. There was no Ukraine. There were parts. There was what was called Malorossia, or in other words, a little Russia, or a Russia Minor is a better translation, before the revolution. If you want to go deeper into history, go on Futurist Trendcast, as I said, and look for my Earthshift report. And then Lenin created republics. There were 15 republics in the Soviet Union. He gave them a lot of independence as far as how they could be run, with their own flags, with their own crests, with their own governments, etc., etc. However, it was all envisioned as part of the big Soviet Union, formerly Russian Empire. So it was, in fact, empire transitioned into the Soviet Union. And it was a pretty smooth transition, not counting the revolution and civil war, of course, and the destruction of economy that had to be rebuilt, etc., etc. However, it's not about this. So Ukraine functioned really well as part of the Soviet Union. Excellent. So much was developed by Russians there. Economy was developed. Best specialists were sent there. Best education was given basically to Ukraine. Ukraine owes everything to Russia. Okay? And I say that knowing what I'm talking about. My mother grew up speaking only Ukrainian at home. She learned Russian when she went to college in Dnipropetrovsk. I know the inside of that. I had relatives who basically spoke mostly Ukrainian at home. So, you know, I have a lot of Ukrainian roots. So when I say Russia, they owe everything to Russia, that is the truth. So in the once independence fell into their lap in 1991, and Ukraine started, instead of developing, it started demoting. It started disintegrating. Oligarchs took over everything, while it happened in Russia and other former republics too. You see, in Russia, it was dealt with by Putin since year 2000 very successfully. And now I usually say that since the year, approximately year 2012 or 2013, there are no more oligarchs in Russia. They are semi-oligarchic structures, but they are not true oligarchs. In other words, they cannot dictate their will to the government. They cannot change the course of the country at will the way they want. Rather, the government influences them. The president influences them. And there is a lot of supervision and a lot of correction in how business class has to operate. So it's actually developing very well. There are problems. Of course, there are problems. Any country has problems. But it is working very well in Russia, as opposed to Ukraine. Ukraine has become the worst example of how oligarchs took over. And oligarchs, by definition, they keep money in the West. Where else are they going to keep money? Wherever they can, they rob the country, and then they transfer it to the West. That's how it was in Russia in the 90s. That's how Russia lost a ton of money and a ton of wealth during the 90s. It was all siphoned in and transferred to the West. But a lot of it came back after Putin came to power, not so in Ukraine. And so West has excellent leverage over any oligarchs in Ukraine. All same, incidentally, is true for Moldova, which is right next door, and which is also on the brink of an uprising right now. And these oligarchs, when certain buttons were pushed, certain strings were pulled by the West, they immediately caved in. They immediately became those puppets for the West. At the same time, there were camps in Western Ukraine where there were what I call Ukro-Nazis, which is Ukrainian fascists that survived from World War II, that those fascists, they killed off, eliminated, burned in concentration camps during World War II, hundreds of thousands of Russians, Ukrainians, Poles, and Jews. There were mass graves discovered all over Western Ukraine. It was a complete disaster. And a lot of them ran from justice when people started naming their names and telling all these horrible stories after World War II. A lot of them ran to Canada and the U.S. Canada especially houses a ton of them. And so a lot of them stayed in Canada. After 1991, many of them started coming back to Ukraine and re-educated Ukrainians. They started, this propaganda was financed by Canadian and U.S. governments, and little by little, the brainwashing occurred. So by the year, they tried in 2004 color revolution, which was the Orange Revolution. That didn't work very well. And Yanukovych, which was a compromise figure, was again elected 4 years later. And so they had to go and do something like really drastic, and they masterminded this plan. Victoria Nuland bragged very famously in 2013 that U.S. spent $5 billion on subverting Ukraine and creating anti-Russia out of Ukraine. And they actually went in. They started brainwashing the population. They invested into the media, and this is where Soros comes in. He financed a lot of Ukrainian media, but especially Ukrainian history books. So they hit the kids. Kids were brainwashed from day one, from first grade, and then into college. All these history books with teachers that came, that spoke Ukrainian, but they were Ukrainians from Canada and U.S., they came in, they sent them in. It was like a infiltration, you know. And they infiltrated not only central Ukraine, Kyiv, and western Ukraine. They started moving these teachers. They actually hit education and media. They did not bother with business at all, taking over business. They wanted to brainwash the population, and they started with kids. And by the time we got to the year 2012, 2013, the new generation grew up, which was anti-Russian, which did not remember real history of their own country, which thought that Russia, some of them actually think now that Russia invaded them together with Hitler or something like that. You know, there are such crazy, crazy things. And it was so easy. It was so easy to brainwash them. Russians counted all this time on the closeness of cultural ties. So to this day, Ukrainians are still speaking Russian, watching Russian movies. But most of Russian movies and Russian TV programming has been actually banned in Ukraine. Now they don't have access to that. But most people go on the internet. And incidentally, several million Ukrainians actually work and live in Russia, because they cannot make money in their own country. By some estimates, illegally up to 7 or 8 million Ukrainians, that includes refugees, legally about 3-4 million at least Ukrainians. So we are up to like 7-8 million of Ukrainians living in Russia. And yet some of them were so brainwashed that they actually think Russia is the enemy, but they're making money off of Russia, okay, and then sent back home to support those troops that attacked Donbass and want to attack Crimea. So the story came to this mega conclusion when oligarchs were put in such a position, and the government were so compromised that they had to sign a very bad agreement with Europe, which was called the Association Agreement. Russians were trying to explain to the government in Ukraine that this will not work because Russia will have to sever economic ties with Ukraine and close all borders for the fear of cheap goods and like competitive goods from Europe flooding into Ukraine and then flooding into Russia through the porous border. But Ukrainians didn't want to listen to any of this, and they started listening eventually when they finally did the number crunching. So Yanukovych backtracked from that agreement, association agreement with the EU. He said that he's not going to be signing it. And that's when the signal was given to start the Maidan, to start this revolution, the bloody Maidan, was developing before that, but it was kind of peaceful at first. But the very bloody revolution started when he said, no, I'm not going to sign that agreement with the EU. And the reason association with agreement with the EU was actually necessary was specifically to tear Ukraine away from Russia. So they it was a provocation, because what was Russia to do? Sever ties with Ukraine, use Ukraine, bring troops into Ukraine to secure that space as part of the Russian world, as a lot of people in Ukraine were actually begging Russia to do. That would create a severe imbalance, and let's just say Russia would be immediately put on notice by the West, so many levels. It could destroy a Russian economy, or at least severely inconvenience the Russian economy. And putting the wedge between Russia and the EU was another mega goal for this, for the U.S. Of course, EU is also culpable in helping out the Ukrainian Maidan, but they were, as Germans tended to be in the 20th century, they were just not smart enough to understand that this is yet again a way to destroy mutually competitors, Germany and Russia, through weakening their economies this way, through putting a wedge between them, through preventing Germany and Russia, EU and Russia coming together and creating one economic space as it was developing in that direction at the time. And so when it happened, of course, it played out exactly by the CIA book. Yanukovych was threatened that his assets in the West would be taken away if he responds militarily to the bloody coup that was developing, if he tries to squash it. And he chickened out. He did not respond. He did not restore order like any president of any country should have done to preserve his country. And the rest is history. We have now what we have. Crimea seceded. Donbass as well as seceded. There are a lot of other turmoils and problems. Ukrainian economy is destroyed by now, absolutely destroyed. And I predicted that incidentally. A lot of Ukro-Nazis are running around, robbing people, killing people inside the country. The law enforcement is non-functioning at all because they're afraid. They're afraid of all these armed thugs. A civil war in the country, splits into two. It's total disaster. Absolute disaster.
You mentioned the notion that Russia is the global balancer vis-a-vis America and the West seems to be the role of the great agitator. You also mentioned prior to us coming on here about how this New World Order project seemed to be on a cresting wave in the 1990s and early 2000s, but now it seems to be failing. In the time we have left on the first half, Lotta, do you want to talk a bit about that?
Yes, I will mention a few things. You just tell me when you want to stop this bit, because we can talk more about it in the second half. So again, a lot begins with 1991. You know, let me start with NWO first. 2014, a lot of people came to me and asked me for help to understand the situation with whether Putin is part of NWO. I know you actually mentioned something about that in the very beginning. And I wrote, and my first Earthshift report was called, Is Putin Part of NWO? Again, anybody interested, please go to Futurist Trendcast. And you will find on the right navigation bar, you will find a link to ESR1, Is Putin Part of NWO? Where I explained everything from A to Z, how Putin cannot be a part of NWO and what NWO actually is. And let me just say a few words only about the NWO. Okay, the thing is that NWO project is very old, a lot older than most people think. And under some other names, it has been kind of advanced and perpetuated by certain Western powers, namely, first of all, of course, Britain, and secondly, France, for about 200 or 300 years. Germany was also in on it, on and off, also Sweden at different times. There are Vatican. We have to mention Vatican. Absolutely. One of the earliest probably NWO attempt was probably by Vatican. And then it's kind of like, they were uniting, then disuniting different forces in this regard. But under other names, it was out there. Then, the very, very tip or at top of NWO happened around the time of the breakdown of the Soviet Union. And here's why. Russia is the great balancer, which I get to back in a moment. And without the powerful great balancer, the Western side is free to take over the world. Okay? So if you weaken Russia to the point that Russia cannot function as the great balancer, which it has been for the longest, longest time, if you weaken Russia to that degree and she cannot perform that role, then you're free to go and do whatever you want. This is why NWO was like cresting, going in that up. And by 1991 through 1999, they thought they got it. They absolutely thought they got it. And as I said, the 100 crucial, very important to understand, crucial turnarounds in the whole situation began when Primakov turned his plane around and flew back to Moscow and refused to conduct negotiations, which seemingly economically were a lifesaver and very lucrative for Russia at the time. And then Putin came to power. That was the end. That was when it started going down, like that plane, you know, that was like going up and suddenly, and all the way down. And now what we are seeing, see, this is important to understand. NWO and Western MSM go hand in hand. Western propaganda, which is spectacular, I have to say.
I take
my hat off. And it started centuries ago in Britain. And they learned to produce the news, the newspapers, the cloud of brainwashing, maybe a couple of centuries ago. It started out as a good thing. You know, it started out great with all the sensational headlines and newspapers. To sell more newspapers, you've got to have sensationalism. You've got to have, like, flashy headlines. It started really great. And then then somebody realized, oh, wait, we can use it as part of our tools for our global dominance. You know this U.S. doctrine, full-spectrum global dominance. This is U.S. doctrine, but before it became U.S. doctrine, it actually was U.K. doctrine. So NWO headquarters, like, migrated across the ocean to the U.S. when the time came for that. But when all this was happening, the entire world was eating from the Anglo-American hand, literally, and listening with their ears hanging out for the propaganda that came out of MSM. That's how spectacular their propaganda was. Russian propaganda, they said that there was Soviet propaganda. Oh, forget it. I know Soviet propaganda, grew up there. I know Western propaganda. Oh, believe me, I couldn't hold a candle to the Western propaganda. Soviet propaganda was a lot more honest in so many ways and also very meek if you compare it to Western. And what they achieved by that, they brainwashed the entire world, including countries like post-Soviet space, and including even Russians. Russians started awakening after they saw what happened in Ukraine. Then the awakening started in Russia really, really quickly. And by now, a lot of Russians already know that they've been duped yet again. And so NWO was doing really great. And as I said, it goes hand in hand with MSM. So they were able to conceal anything to do with NWO project for a while. So when you never heard about NWO, and just depending on how old your audience is, they might roll their memory back and see and remember years when they never heard anything to do with NWO, like in the 90s. Have you ever heard about it? Obviously not, right? The world was completely different. And then suddenly, starting, and not in the beginning of the 2000s, you have not heard about it. And suddenly you start hearing about NWO everywhere. And then Bilderberg comes around, and that is big news. And now everybody knows about Bilderberg. And now everybody knows about all kinds of these secret projects that were concealed before. And I'm not going to go over them. Just use your judgment in what you include in this. And that is because they are unable to conceal the truth anymore. This is because they lost the grip on propaganda. Okay, so when that happens, they become so weakened. It is the indication of their downfall. It is on the way down. NWO is disintegrating. That project is over. I said that all in 2014 and explained the whole story and why it's laughable to think that Putin is part of NWO. In my first Earthshift report, is Putin part of NWO? All that is outlined there and how, incidentally, alternative media also is complicit oftentimes in this, and knowingly or unknowingly, I explained about hoaxes, about targeted info dumps, how all this works, how it's all created on purpose, and how it is spread through alternative media, social media, etc. It's all in the report, the whole mechanics of how it works. So where we're at right now is NWO is actually disintegrating. It is being abandoned by many groups who are at their core are globalist groups. And this goes hand in hand. See, it's all very connected. You have to see a full picture here. This goes absolutely hand in hand in how Russia is strengthening at the same time. So the global balancer that and stabilizer that is Russia is strengthening as NWO is weakening. And so that brings us directly to what is the great balancer. There will be a book about that, and there is a little bit of material on my website, laderay.com, or laderay.info that you mentioned previously is the same site. You can type in either laderay.com or info. It brings you to the same site. And you can read some of that there. What is the global balancer? So Russia, anybody who looks at the map will probably be astounded by the size of the Russian territory. And a relatively small population to go with that. Russia has about 150, at this point, about 165 million people population. And the territory is the largest in the world, even though Russia lost those former republics, which made it even bigger. And here is why karmically and cosmically speaking, from the higher consciousness perspective view, Russia needs such huge territory, because Russia is the great balancer. And the bigger, the wider your territory, well, just spread your arms like this and try to balance with them on a little rope, if you walk on the rope, right? Or in a narrow space. Or don't have your arms spread and just have them by the size of your body and try to walk that way. It's much more likely that you will fall off if you don't have your arms spread to your side. So the wider the territory, the better to balance. Is that easy? Okay? It's that's why, cosmically speaking and karmically speaking, Russia will always have huge territory, because you cannot have a great balancer without a huge spread out territory. I also compare it to the seesaw. You know, if you, how the seesaw works, there is this, you know, the board that is the seesaw and the base of it, okay, in the center. So Russia is the base and the board. So the board has to be very wide in order to swing properly. And in our world, it's a 3D world. And this 3D world, it is what I call the yin-yang world. In other words, it's always balanced between two sides, dark and light, aggressive and submissive, or aggressive and peaceful, let's say, female and male, right? And so the West plays the role of karmically predestined role of, I said, the great agitator, which is a neutral term. You can also call him, and that's going to be more of a negative term, the great aggressor, okay, if you want to go negative. If you want to go really positive, in the most positive manifestation, the great agitator, manifests as the great energizer. And this is what West should be playing, that kind of role. But it always deviates towards the great aggressor, okay? Or at least the great agitator. And it's not becoming, the West is failing to become its best version, which could be the great energizer for the world. And this is what, ideally, in the best of worlds, the West should be, including the U.S., including Western Europe and U.K. When people's consciousness rises to the point that people will understand that the way to work in this world is to cooperate with each other, not to fight with each other, then the West can fulfill its real role, the role of the great energizer, spreading the energy and helping Yin nations, which are the third world nations, which are primarily Africa, South America to different degrees, and most of Asia. If you energize the third world and Asian and Latin American nations, and the Middle East is also in that category as well, more or less. And the U.S. sometimes plays that role, okay, but oftentimes, more often than not, plays the role of the aggressor. And Russia is in between. Yin nations are East and South, what is called the Global South, and Global West is the Yang part of the equation. And Russia is in between. Russia is the only world. It's more than a country. It's a world. It's a realm on our planet that is fully balanced. It's Yin Yang. So anytime the great balancer becomes imbalanced, which is what happened during World War One and the Russian Revolution, Russia became severely imbalanced. The same thing happened in 1991. Russia again got severely imbalanced, and that weakens the great balancer. And then the aggressive West starts taking over. But now Russia is rebalancing it again, and this time Russia will be doing the rebalancing very differently, even though we see the indication of switching more energy to the East. But in reality, Russia is doing something very different. And if you want me to, I can discuss it in the second half of your show, and I will tell you exactly what Russia is trying to do this time to correct the mistakes of the past.
That would be fantastic, Lada, because we're just getting started here. And in the second half also, I'd like you to talk about the Earth Shift Theory, as well as you had some breaking news from Eurasia, the Russian Duma elections, and how it affects us here in the West. I would like your take on, it's so big in the American mainstream media, Hillary Clinton, this farcical theater of the absurd election campaign in America, from the overall, and I like your term, multidimensional aspect. What does it mean when we're seeing Hillary Clinton break down and melt down in this fashion? So we're just getting started here. We've reached the end of the first hour. You've been listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. If you like what we're doing, if you like the kinds of guests we're bringing on, such as Lada Ray, please go on to thecosmicswitchboard.com and subscribe and become a member. We've reached the end of the first hour, and we will be back shortly. Thank you very much.